Welcome to another Directions Media podcast. This is Adina Schutzberg, Executive Editor. Today's topic is using location information to detect online fraud. Now, this may sound like an exotic use of location technology, but more than likely, if you've made a purchase online, your location has been cross-checked against your credit card to determine if there's a likelihood of fraud. Now, today I'm joined by Sonia Schindelier, Vice President of Business Development at Quova. Now, early in March, she led a panel at the Merchant Risk Council 7th Annual E-Commerce Payments and Risk Conference, and that panel was titled IP Geolocation, Using Location as a Weapon in a Fight Against CNP Fraud. Now, in that panel, the goal was to highlight specific location-based best practices to fight fraud. So, Sonia, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very much for this opportunity, Adina.
Okay, now before we dive into those best practices for using location to combat fraud, I want you to help me out with that acronym that was in the title of the panel, and that's CNP.
Yes, CNP is an acronym for the term card not present, and that refers, of course, to any purchase being made over the internet where the information is provided, but the physical card itself is not present in the transaction. The significance is, of course, that all of the security devices that have been built into that little piece of plastic no longer apply when the card is not part and parcel of the transaction.
Okay, and that means that it is far more possible for people to make trouble and have fraud be committed online.
The other significant point to card-not-present transactions is that there is a liability shift that should fraud happen, in most circumstances, it's now the merchant that's liable for the loss that's realized.
So the merchants are very anxious to combat fraud and prevent it.
And absolutely.
What Quova is all about is, hey, let's use location as a key tool to indicate whether fraud might be present.
It's a very, very predictive indicator that something may be wrong with the transaction that's occurring at that time.
Okay, well, let's start at the beginning. And basically what Quova does is locate where the computer that's starting the transaction is. Is that the short and sweet of it?
Exactly. Every machine that has the ability to connect to the internet has an address associated with it, what's called an IP address. And it is very much like a physical address. You can't deliver the mail without an address. I can't deliver content over the internet without an address with whom I'm communicating. So it's what we call the on-ramp to the internet. Where are you connecting to the internet?
And that's sort of the starting point for this analysis of fraud. So once Quova software gets hold of an IP address, it can turn that into a set of information about that machine, right?
Absolutely. Now, there's several different pieces of information that can be derived from the IP address. Obviously, geography is a big piece of that, and we look at not only the country and state level, but also the city-level information on where the IP is located. And then there's other derived information that can be extracted from that. Probably the most important piece of information is simply the latitude and longitude at which that IP is located, so that people can now start doing comparisons between the address where they know Sonia to be or where Adina professes to be, and then we can do comparisons to say, but would her IP address confirm that, or is the geography conflicting?
One of the first things you look at then is exactly that. Am I where you think I should be?
We're very comfortable with the fact that we have a bill-to address, a ship-to address, a home address, a work address. This is just another address. And does it match up with what we believe to be true? So if Adina is purchasing something online and tells me that she's based in New York, but her IP address is based out of Miami or California or Romania, that raises questions and red flags and indicates that there may be a problem with the transaction and there may, in fact, be fraud.
Right, but of course, there are all kinds of reasons why Adina may be ordering from a vendor when she is in Romania or Miami or California.
So many of us now are connected to home base through our computers because we are traveling, whether it's for pleasure or for business. And you raise an excellent point that it's not just about the IP address. It's also about the additional information that we can tell you about the IP. How is this person connecting? Because it's not really the IP address you care about. It's knowing if that consumer is in the same location as the IP address. And we do go to that level of detail to give you information about, but how is Adina connecting? If she's on a fixed cable or modem, we know that the likelihood that she's very close to the IP is very high. If Adina is connecting through a satellite, I really can't tell you if Adina is in the same location as the IP. Our customers take that information, additional information, into consideration in writing their rules to determine the level of risk that is really posed at the time of that transaction. If you are traveling, the information that they may be looking at will dictate the likelihood that they're going to continue the transaction with you. And quite frankly, it's been shown time and time again that the correlation between great distances, between your home address and your IP, do have a much, much higher incidence of fraud. And you may find that transactions are being declined because of that.
Another piece of information that you highlighted in these five best practices had to do with the domain information.
Some top-level domains, now just for the information of anyone listening into the podcast, the three digits that occur after the final dot in your email address or IP address indicates the type of domain that you're dealing with. So, for example, we're all very familiar with .com. If it's .edu, which is an educational facility, it actually has a higher risk level than .gov or .mil, which is government and a military type of access. Why is that? Because in educational facilities, you very often have computers that are kind of in the public domain. So when many different people have access, your risk level definitely goes up. So that's your top-level domain. The information in front of that last dot also gives you information that can be indicative of risk. If it's a corporate domain, so for example, Quova.com, that gives you a level of confidence, comfort, if Sonia's email address is also Quova.com. If you see something like Kinko's.com, again, more public computers in a venue where pretty much anyone has access. So our customers, Quova customers, take this level of detail into very careful consideration in determining the risk of that particular transaction.
Okay, so that's another one of the pieces of information that goes into, and you referred to it before, as a set of rules that a vendor might use to determine which transactions should be flagged and which ones are okay to keep going through the process.
Most of our customers have many different rules and based on many different data sets, of which Quova data is one, but that brings real predictive capabilities and risk indicators to a broader scoring or rules-driven system as they're deciding what the appropriate response is to the consumer.
Let's move on to the third best practice, which has to do with user profiles. And that's something that I think freaks people out, this idea that vendors sort of keep track of what they buy and when they buy and how they buy and from where they buy and where they ship to, those kinds of things.
Well, you know, it certainly shouldn't be perceived as a negative. We deal so much with the merchant community, but also with the banking community, and particularly with the banks. you know, they have information about us as banking customers that require them and us to know something about us. That's part of being able to protect us on an ongoing basis as well. So in the same way that they keep track of my home address, it is a wise business decision to keep track of my IP address as well. Because if Sonia is coming back onto a website and saying, hi, it's me again, I'd like to do something else, I'm based in California and you can confirm my address, typically you see me come in from one of two IP addresses. And this is true for most people. We either use our home computer or we use our work computer. All off hours, of course, not on company time. But that's how we typically transact business. So in the same way that you would ask a question and put up a red flag if I told you, hey, I don't live in California anymore, I've moved to Miami. Well, in the same way, if you see that my IP address, and you're used to seeing that come in from California, is now in Miami, it should raise the same red flag, particularly if I'm telling you, but I am still in California. So it's very much, it's not, you know, the word profile has had some negative connotations, particularly in the last few years. But in this case, the profile is being used in the positive way of providing an additional level of protection that really triggers something only when something has changed.
And those profiles can actually be very valuable to the customer, too, sort of beyond this sort of core information, but in the sense of their purchase history. I know I had a situation just recently where I had to return something that I purchased some number of years ago, and they said, oh, yeah, yep, we see that in your history. You did, in fact, buy that, so return it, and we'll send you a new one.
It's a good example of profiling, Adina, just to make everything easier for the consumer, and in our particular circumstances and with our data, to ensure that it's not somebody that is posing as Adina and trying to take advantage of the systems that are in place. Just an extra check and balance to make sure that everything is above board.
The next best practice has to do with connection velocity. And this is a pretty interesting one, actually.
As you can imagine, when information is traveling over the internet, over the web, there is a time consideration. Although we think of these things as being instantaneous, for my information, for my signal to travel to the United Kingdom, there is a time factor involved. And that is one thing that can be measured very precisely. So if I am dealing with my bank in California, they expect the traveling time for my information to be very short. If I am communicating with a bank in or a merchant in New York, the time becomes measurably longer, and of course, the further I get away, the longer the period of time. So what companies are looking at is that connection time and looking at the time zone. So I'm telling them I'm on Pacific. Does it make sense, based on where they are, the length of time it's taking that transaction to travel? Because if I'm saying I'm in California and it's taking a much longer time, then the indication is there that I'm not where I'm saying I am. And another good example of this is if we take it back to the physical world, if I drive up to a store in Los Angeles and make a transaction using a card, and then half an hour later there's another transaction in New York, well, we know that's physically not possible. Well, in the same way on the virtual or on the internet world, if I transact in California and then I'm accessing that same merchant or that same bank account half an hour later from an IP that's in New York, that's still not possible. I can't be in two places that are so geographically dispersed in such a short period of time. Very predictive that something isn't making sense in those transactions.
Now, the last best practice has to do with these things called proxy servers. And that's something I think that's a little bit fuzzy to a lot of people, what a proxy server is and how it can, in a sense, cause some confusion within a transaction.
A proxy server stands in between the consumer and the consumer's IP and the merchant or company with whom they are connecting. It masks where I really am. Not all anonymizing proxies are bad things, but we do know that when an anonymizing proxy is being used, some types of anonymizing proxies, the fraud rate is very much higher. So, for example, there's proxies that are in the public domain, and in fact, anonymizer.com is one of those best known. Some people do use anonymizers because they're very privacy conscious. So, you know, they're using it for an acceptable reason, but typically anonymizers are used for less noble purposes, to hide someone's identity. What we do is identify for the Quova users when an IP address has been confirmed as an anonymizing proxy so that they can make their business decisions fully informed and so that they can fully understand what their potential risk might be. You know, it's a tricky world out there, and the anonymity that the internet brings to the world is very attractive to the fraud community. So as they're using some of these additional tools to try to fool the merchants and the customers, that's where technologies like Quova really come into play to try to uncover some of the weaknesses and the risks that are being exploited by the criminal community.
And again, this is one of many pieces of information that are going to be put through this set of rules to determine whether this is a transaction that's going to go through and we're okay with it, or that it needs to be flagged and have more attention paid to it to determine whether or not we're comfortable with it.
And they take so many different things into consideration, including what is it that the person is trying to buy. If you're buying children's clothing, the risk is very much less than someone that's trying to buy electronics. So many different factors get taken into consideration, but it's so important that this type of information plays into that ultimate decision. Because if I'm sitting behind a proxy trying to buy gift cards to a merchant, you can be almost guaranteed that there's fraudulent activity underway.
To wrap up, we've gone through sort of these five best practices. Now, on your panel were some Quova customers, Ticketmaster and Orbitz and Dell Financial Services, the guys who help us get credit to buy their fine computers. What kinds of stories could they tell about using this technology to prevent fraud? Could you just give us some examples?
Well, you know, it was really gratifying to me as we went through the presentation that they were all nodding their heads and agreeing that these are the types of basic checks that they put into place. One of the panel members charmed everyone, though, with her story that as she spent time at our booth at the Merchant Risk Council, we were talking about the different types of information that are available about an individual level IP. And she had focused on what we call the IP routing type. And, you know, that is an indicator of the likelihood that a consumer is in the same proximity as their computer or access device. And we had talked about the fact that cable modems and DSL lines, they're fixed. And it does mean that the consumer is very close to the computer. And she said, you know, I never really thought about that piece of information. She said to the audience, well, I couldn't stop thinking about it. I got up at 4 o'clock in the morning and sat down and wrote another rule within my system to allow for this factor, which then has reduced my perceived risk. So everyone found that very charming, that she dreams about IP geolocation and writes rules in the middle of the night. They talked about the number of rules that they look at, and it's interesting, it ranged from 3 to, you know, well over 100 different types of rules that can be taken into consideration in looking at the risk on these transactions. It was a wonderful panel that attested once again to the benefits that this type of information brings in their identifying fraud.
I think this is just a whole other way to think about using geographic information, location intelligence, to do better business and make better decisions about fraud in our new and continually growing online world.
It's an exciting world. It's an exciting opportunity. And as we all know, the online world and the geography of the online world makes this a very small world.
Well said. I want to thank my guest, Sonia Schindelier, Vice President of Business Development at Quova. You can find Quova at quova.com at their top-level domain.
Nadine, I just wanted to thank you so much for this opportunity to be able to help educate your audience as well on what we're doing in this space.
If you have comments on today's podcast, you can email Directions Media at editors@directionsmag.com. Thanks for joining me today, and be sure to tell a friend.